According to Dr. D. Griffin, clinical professor and director of the Texas A&M Veterinary Medical Center at West Texas A&M University, and also a BQA pioneer, beef quality assurance can be defined as follows, and I quote, "It's a process of figuring out what could go wrong, planning to avoid it, then validating and documenting what you've done. BQA is just a part of good business," end quote. Welcome to the Beef Roundtable. I'm Dr. Ron Lemonade, your Beef Extension Specialist at Purdue University, West Lafayette, Indiana.
And I'm Bert Rutherford, Senior Editor of Beef Magazine. I'm based in Denver, Colorado. Each month on the Beef Roundtable, we discuss timely topics that impact the beef business. This week, we discuss beef producers telling your story.
The Beef Roundtable is recorded live and edited to fit the time constraints of the program. The programs are available at Beef Magazine website, iTunes, YouTube.com, as well as BeefRoundtable.com.
Our first guest today is Dr. Ron Gill, professor and extension livestock specialist for Texas AgriLife Extension. In addition, he serves as associate department head and program leader for extension in the Department of Animal Sciences at Texas A&M University. Ron received the Vice Chancellor's Award in Excellence on two separate occasions, one in particular for his contributions to the Beef Quality Assurance Team. He also has been recognized as Specialist of the Year by the Texas County Agricultural Agents Association.
Our second guest is Josh White. Josh serves as the Executive Director of Producer Education for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. Josh and his team work to make the beef quality assurance, as well as stocksmanship and stewardship and Cattlemen's College programs that deliver a greater value to the NCBA membership and the cattle industry in its entirety. He's a fourth-generation beef producer and continues to own cattle on his family's farm in Georgia.
The BQA program, as we know it today, was really first established in 1987 by the Beef Checkoff. BQA principles, as Ron mentioned, are based on good management practices designed to meet consumer demand as well as the U.S. food production system's needs. Ron, how has the program evolved over the last years, many, many years that we've had a BQA program?
Well, when we look at how the program has evolved, to me, we've found issues that we need to deal with, and we've tried to address those. And as we've got into that process, we've looked at ways we can improve production practices and document what we've done and pass that added value on in the customer chain.
You know, by way of historical note, nothing more than that, when I first started at the Texas Cattle Feeders Association many, many years ago, we began a beef quality assurance program, and I was very fortunate and honored to be the staff person to staff the committee that developed that program, ultimately, which turned into the first BQA program that the beef industry established. Very quickly, I mailed a whole bunch of our manuals to many other states. They took our program, improved upon it, made it better, and ultimately NCBA took the program and really put wheels under it. The initial program that I helped put together really was nothing more than following withdrawal times and needle placement, you know, to avoid lesions. It's come quite some way since way back then.
That's right, Bird. I'd just add to that, we've done quite a bit with technology more recently. We've over the years certainly built out the curriculum to include more on nutrition and stockmanship, which Ron's helped tremendously with. But also moving it into the new millennium with online training and more video resources and just tons of information and resources available through BQA.org today.
Well, and I think, you know, Josh and Ron, you know, another change from what Bert referred to is, you know, proper placement and withdrawals. You know, now we're talking about things like low stress animal handling and environmental stewardship and some of those things that weren't really part of the game back then. And how does the National Beef Quality Audit kind of fit into all of that? How's that changed our training and our thought process?
I'll jump on that, Josh. To me, the quality audit's always been our benchmark to see where we're at and really help develop the programs and direction we need to go with BQA and other educational opportunities. But, you know, we started out trying to fix problems, and I think we've kind of evolved into a better system, where a total quality management kind of system, where we're trying to prevent things from happening. And I think that's where we've taken it from, you know, once we've got injection site lesions kind of under control and we're really focused on residue issues, and now we can put more and more emphasis on judicious use of antibiotics when we have to use them, responsible use there. The whole stockmanship component to me adds to that preventative strategy that BQA is kind of focused on right now. Is and managing problems out's never been a good system. And so I'm really proud of the BQA program for being proactive and trying to get ahead of problems rather than fix problems, which is basically how we got started, as Bert said.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of examples of that, too, to build on what Ron's saying. You know, in the new online modules, and a lot of our state coordinators also at the in-person trainings are focusing more on things like lowering stress and weaning practices, preconditioning, acclimation at the feed yard, whether that's through handling or how we set cattle up nutritionally for success. So yeah, we've certainly built out parts of that are based on learnings from the National Beef Quality Audit. Some of it is just evolving in the industry with what Ron mentioned, as we judiciously use antimicrobials and focus on stewardship there. Also regulatory changes that come along and supply chain protocol, you know, changes in the supply chain, what they're asking of our feed yards and other segments of the industry.
Josh, you've been quoted as saying it's the responsibility of the industry to proactively come together and develop guidelines that consumers trust. How can we persuade a skeptical public about the importance and the success of the Beef Quality Assurance Program?
Yeah, that's a good point, Ron. And I'll answer that. There's a couple of different answers or directions we could go with that. Our research, at NCBA as a contractor, the checkoff, we do a lot of consumer research, and we've done panels and focus groups around production issues and BQA. And when we talk about our judicious use guidelines at BQA, it resonates very well with consumers. When we talk about, how we take, how we handle cattle seriously, it really resonates well with consumers. Other consumer data we gather shows that most consumers are just generally concerned with how cattle are raised. It's not as specific as a lot of the hot button issues we may hear about in the industry. Very few consumers, under 10% when unprompted, if you just ask them if they're concerned about how cattle are raised, very few under 10% will mention hormones or antibiotics by name. It's usually more about making sure we're doing a good job raising cattle. And that's what BQA is all about. It's definitely developed into a more holistic approach to how we do that. And our program is primarily focused on the live cattle side, live animal side, and focused on educating producers. But, you know, we have to walk the walk before others in the checkoff supported industry, whether it's the Masters of Beef Advocacy or our other advocacy programs, can talk the talk to consumers. So BQA is the walk the walk. We've got to do a good job on our farms and ranches and abide by those guidelines. We need more folks to get certified. We're always working on building out our numbers for our certifications, because we do get asked that, especially by the supply chain, how many producers are certified. And so we're working on getting a better handle on that, working with our state coordinators to report that data in aggregate. And then, of course, we brought the new online modules in-house, so we have that database here now if you're online trained. So We're not sharing out individual information, but we do want that aggregate data to be able to tell our story to consumers and to the supply chain.
You know, Josh, just to kind of follow up on what you and Ron have said, I think one of the things about the BQA program that we have now, the stockmanship and stewardship part of that, Ron, and I know you've given cattle handling demonstrations any place where they can set up some portable panels and run some cattle in them. And that's really been a hot button issue in the beef business for quite a while. And an area that I think has where we really, really have made some improvements and made some changes in the industry. What's your perspective on that? Are you seeing a change out in the country as far as how people handle cattle?
Well, I think we are, and it has been a long process. Some ships pretty old and pretty hard to steer sometimes when. And changing tradition is one of the hardest things, and changing habits actually is one of the hardest things I've ever tried to do in my education career. And the way people work cattle is somewhat personal to them. And when you come in with perhaps a different way of doing it, and the implication is that it's better than what they've been doing, it kind of, you have some pushback initially. And we've gone through that phase, and now we're starting to see people that really are embracing that there is a different way to do some things and some ways to improve what they've always done. And so it is kind of refreshing to start to see some of these operations and big operations really embrace it. Feedlot level has really probably come on board as fast as anybody. And we always have this issue of turnover as well, and new ideas come in or old ideas creep back in. And so trying to get this across, we can train the hands to do things, but until management requires it to be done a certain way and buys in fully, as any practice, it never gets implemented completely. So I think as well, the whole issue with the antibiotics and trying to be a little more judicious in how we use them, if we can reduce the stress of the way we handle cattle and train cattle, to me, it makes a big difference down the line in how much sickness we have to treat. And so, to me, it's all part of that systems approach to managing beef, and it starts with how we handle cattle.
You know, the National Beef Quality Audit over the years has shown that we're really making improvements in a lot of areas. To kind of follow up on that, how do we remain vigilant? How do we continue to instill that ethic in beef producers following BQA principles is not only good on the ranch or the feed yard, but good for the whole world?
Well, I think we do have to kind of keep it personal, too, is why it's important to them. And that's kind of the harder, you know, the big picture is easy to sell, why it's beneficial to each individual. Sometimes where we run into a little bit of resistance. But we've got to continue to get better. The good thing about it is we get better, we add value to our cattle, and that translates into more dollars in your pocket. And so there's not a real direct link. If you do BQA practice, you're going to get paid X amount of dollars. That's not the way it works. We add value, you know, and we talk about BQA, but it's really a food safety and a food beef quality component. There's two separate things there that all go together to add value to this product. So not only do we talk about the food safety concerns and judicious use of antibiotics, but are we building a better product? And is the consumer happier with that product at the end of the day because of the genetics we use, the management practices we implement, and then when they put it on the plate, does it eat right? And no blemishes in it. All those things. And to me, it is a true system approach to producing beef and a high quality product put on somebody's table. And, you know, we get kind of hung up on the nuts and bolts and the little details on it, but the end product, free of defects, high quality eating experience, and at a reasonably affordable price, I think is all of our end goal.
With confidence that we're raising them the right way. You know, that's the other piece that I mentioned about the consumer research. And speaking of the quality audit, you know, I think you guys did a great roundtable earlier with Deb Van Overbeck and Dr. Niffen, and I encourage folks to go back and watch that. because we're not going to get too deep into it here today, but we have released the cow and bull audit as well, and so that information is available now at bqa.org. And, you know, it really shows a huge decline in severity of bruising. Both audits really showed that we're still seeing quite a high incidence of bruising, but when it's minor bruising, you know, a pound of trim versus a whole primal or subprimal, that's a huge value difference. And that's, I mean, we're talking about 20% moves in severity in the dairy side, especially, and in beef cows. So quite a large move. So when it comes to that, also we did a subset of plants. We did look at injection site lesions, and that data is reported out in the cow and bull audit. We're seeing drastic reduces, you know, reductions in that from the dairy side in the 30+% incidence and slice audits in the round down to the teens, and beef all the way down to 7% in beef cows and bulls. So, and that's, I think, from 17 about 15, 20 years ago. So we're making significant progress, but you hear I didn't say 0% on that slice audit. So there is still room to move, Bert. As you mentioned, you know, we've come a long way, but we want to get that down to zero.
Let me just ask another question here, and it's kind of related to this, that, you know, Ron, you mentioned that you know, there's the opportunity to improve the quality of the cattle and also the price received. But we've got a lot of producers that say, well, you know, if I'm not going to get paid a premium for my product because I'm BQA certified, and we do have some states around the country that, you know, have special sales that are required to be BQA certified. You know, it might be a preconditioned sort of graded sale. But what about the producer that's just taken his cattle or her cattle to the local sale barn? You know, how do you convince them that BQA is the right thing to do?
Well, that is the tough sale. Is somebody, one, that has that attitude that they've got to get paid to do the right thing. And that's always been the argument I have is, you know, why should we get paid extra to do things right? We're not going above and beyond. It's just the practices that we're implementing. We need to do it correctly. And to me, maybe there's discounts applied to those that don't. That's kind of the way the industry works anyway. There's very few premiums ever paid. There's kind of a benchmark we need to all get to, and that's a minimum amount of things that need to be done. And when we do them, we're expected to do them correctly. And so I have a little issue with that whole concept. We got to get paid to do things right. But that is out there. The thing that we've shown in a lot of auction market value audits, I guess you could call them, you know, what calves bring more, those with some evidence that they've been processed bring more money. The other thing, if you'll implement some of the lower stress handling techniques, we have less shrink in those cattle. So if you look at the totality of how things go, you get paid for doing things right when you actually go through the process, get your cattle trained. They don't shrink as much at the auction market. They don't shrink as much when you're gathering. So there's a whole lot of ways that aren't visible, and I think that's the problem. They're not really somebody writing you an extra check for what you've done. But what they are, you're capitalizing on your investments in genetics, processing. If you'll just put a ear tag in a calf, it's worth about $2 a hundredweight. Just because they realize that calf's been handled, he's probably had some vaccines put in him. If they're castrated and dehorned and all those things, it adds value to it as well. So all the best management practices we talk about that are the core tenets of BQA add value to cattle. And so to me, it's pretty easy to get paid for doing things right and actually set yourself a little bit above. We've actually tried a program in Texas several years ago where we had ear tags that BQA certified producers could put in their cattle. As they go through the market chain, we was hoping to add enough volume of those cattle going through to create an additional awareness and volume and some expectation that they actually receive a little more money. They weren't utilized very much. So we can build the machine and we can put it in front of them, but it has to be utilized by those producers because it is voluntary. Nobody's forcing them to do anything. So we try to just make it a program that's it's actually pretty easy to implement beef quality assurance practices. You're not having to go above and beyond. The whole documentation of what we do, I think, is another tenet that we have to address to some extent. But in Texas, we decided not to have preconditioned calf sales tied to BQA. That was a conscious decision we made. But in other states where they do that, it does set those cattle apart. Now, what we've also done is we work with local auction markets to set their own cattle apart. And so they require their producers to come through there to be BQA certified. We didn't do that as a state organization or a state program. The auctions do that. And so if you're going to send cattle through there, we have to be verified that we are BQA certified. We're doing things correctly. And that was the approach we took. And we see other places doing that as well. Superior Video Auction, for example. We don't require it, but they can require that in some of those programs. So we've kind of built the model and let industry kind of take it and run with it. And to me, that's for long-term sustainability. That was the approach we needed to take. It's been slow to get adopted. But to me, it's there. I mean, right now we see programs that set BQA certified cattle apart and give people recognition and dollars in their pocket for doing that.
Josh, let me follow up with it.
We're seeing more of it from the supply chain as well, Ron. We're seeing you can Google public statements by Wendy's, the hamburger franchise company, that they want BQA, you know, cattle handled under BQA guidelines and principles at the feed yard level. We're seeing it from packers requiring their feed yards to be BQA compliant. So, it's not only the right thing to do. You need to take, you know, in my opinion, you know, I take pride in my cattle. I take pride in how they're handled, how they're raised, the genetics, et cetera. And I want credit for that. And the way to do that is to let people know you're BQA certified and provide some history on those cattle. It's about telling the whole story around those cattle. And for the cow-calf guy and then for the feed yard guys, they're seeing the pull of it from the other side, from the supply chain.
Josh, you mentioned some of the packers are requiring BQA certification. In the swine industry, the pork quality assurance program is kind of a mandated situation if you're going to deliver hogs. Do you see that happening? I mean, are we going to evolve to the point where that's going to be kind of a mandate, do you think?
You know, I can't speak to anybody but those that have made the public statements, like Cargill has made public statements. Again, you can Google that right quick, Cargill and BQA and antibiotics, and they made a statement that sort of set some targets for all of that several years back. I guess from my perspective, the BQA program is about producer education. It's about creating great tools and resources for producers and for our state coordinators to further roll out and develop and create opportunity for our producers to advance how they raise cattle and do the right thing. You know, there's certainly no intent from the checkoff side from BQA to do any requirement. Now, what the industry does in a business-to-business manner, what packers or retail or food service does, you know, we're not in control of that for sure. We're here to create great tools and resources for the industry to use.
I think it's interesting that, you know, the market side is asking for some kind of verification program. Kind of coming back from the major retailers are asking for products that have some background in verification. Those are starting to be built by the packers or the purveyors of product and asking for that. It's been kind of interesting when we hear about it and we can present BQA, said this is already in existence. They said, well, yeah, let's use that. And so I think that's why BQA is being perceived as being required. It's not. It's the process that BQA represents being required. And so rather than have them all reinvent the wheel, we have a model here that they can use, and we provide it to them voluntarily, but they can pick it up and say, yeah, that fits what our customers say we need. And that's where BQA appears to be required. And the pork deal is different. They come in and said, yes, you got to be beef pork quality certified to sell pigs. And the other part of it, you know, in Texas, we're up to about 95% of our feeding capacity is coming out of BQA certified yards. So even if you mandated it, you wouldn't gain a whole lot by doing that, particularly in the feeding sector. And I think of the cow, calf, and stocker, we're still gaining on that, still adding people. But the fed cow side have embraced this. They have that direct link to the next level, and they are willing to verify that these processes are ongoing on their operation and audit themselves here in Texas for sure. Well, they actually have third party that audit themselves. They actually have third party audits.
So how does BQA fit in with the branded products like Laura's Lean and Certified Angus Beef and Nolan Ryan's All Natural and a whole host of others? How does that fit?
Well, I think it would fit basically like we just discussed. It is a process verification kind of protocol. And if they're wanting to brand a product, they don't want any blemishes in it. They want some assurances that everything was done, particularly any kind of injectable products or feed ingredients or whatever was handled correctly. So to me, they could very easily, just like any other packer or product chain, could use these BQA guidelines to say, you know, follow these and you'll produce a product that'll meet our specs. Because most of that winds up being a cooler sort anyway. They just want to make sure that those products have come through the production chain without any blemishes ending up in the end product. And to me, that's BQA fits perfectly into that scenario. And if they adopt the philosophy that you need to be BQA certified as their model rather than coming out with a Laura Lean quality assurance program or Certified Angus quality assurance, that's the thing we're really trying to fight is trying to have 30 or 40 different audit trails out there that we have to go through. And, you know, Bert, we started this in the 80s as process verified feed yards, I think was the name that was actually given back then before BQA. And so that's what BQA is, a verification of processes. And so we have it there. We don't need to keep reinventing the wheel.
Guys, I apologize. If you heard the duck quacking, that was my phone.
You're supposed to mute that before we start there.
I did. Forget to mute it before we started. Josh, you know, we've talked a lot about producers getting BQA certified. What advantages are there to that? And we've talked about adding value to BQA cattle. I guess the question is, if I'm a cow-calf or stalker guy out there just trying to make a buck or two off these cattle, why should I bother to get certified?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of different, I think Ron's touched on a few things. I've touched on a few things as far as pride of how you raise your cattle. Another angle we haven't mentioned that I often share is, you know, you can go to a cattleman's meeting and talk about all the bad things that PETA and HSUS and all sorts of folks are doing, trying to paint us in a bad light. And you can get folks pretty riled up, you know, cow calf guys, stockers, feed yard, it doesn't matter. You can really get their emotions riled up and get them, willing to want to do something. Well, the something to do is, first of all, get BQA certified. There's no excuse for any producer out there not to be BQA certified with all the resources that we've got available between in-person and online training modules. So that is the first step in us being able to walk the walk and say we are raising cattle right. We are doing the right thing. We're handling them in a way that gives them the best chance to succeed from a health standpoint, from a welfare standpoint, and also to deliver a great product. And then if you want to go beyond that, then you can talk about that Masters of Beef Advocacy program and some other programs. But in my opinion, you know, a lot of folks will come up after a talk that focuses more on consumer perceptions and the activists and whether I'm delivering it or somebody else on my team, I always encourage them to, number one point of action, you may not be able to go stand in a grocery store and talk to consumers, but you can certainly get BQA certified, which allows our teams that, whether it's at NCBA or other checkoff contractors or the packers or brand marketers, to say we're raising cattle right.
But getting certified is just the first step. I mean, just because you're certified doesn't mean you're done. Is that right?
That's right. Uh-oh. My lights went out here. Let me fix that.
You didn't move enough there, Gus. I do think it is a very much a first step in BQA certification. To me, it should be used as an onboarding kind of training for new hires. That ought to be the first thing that anybody hired onto a processing crew ought to have to sit down and see how to do things right. And to me, we've got the materials to do that. They don't have to send them anywhere. You can do it online through the national program, through state programs. And so to me, it's just a training tool to start with. And rather than having to sit down and individually everybody have to build their own little training module, why not use BQA to onboard these new hires? Processing crews, cowboy crews, whatever it might be. So I think as we build this library of things to choose from, that hopefully will be a direction we go and can add value across the board there as well. But it is the first step. Then we got to make sure things are done right. We can show them how we want it done, but somebody has to follow up and make sure it's getting done. And anytime we're not watching and following up and management's not paying attention, things can backslide. One new hire, do things different, and everything can start sliding backwards. So to me, it's just a constant vigilance. And, you know, we never have truly come to zero issues in any of the areas that we work on. Josh and I were talking about this earlier. You know, we've not finished on injection site lesions. We've not finished on proper antibiotic use. Nothing of that is finished because of new people coming in. You know, we have a tremendous number of new people coming into the cattle business every year, particularly in Texas. As many people are moving in here, we're splitting properties up. We've got to train all of them because those cattle are going in the supply chain as well. So it's a never-ending process, but I think we now have the tools to get it done quicker, faster, more efficiently, and with some kind of standardization behind it, particularly with the guidelines set at the national level, and everybody can just figure out how to implement it from there.
You know, we've created this system for beef, all right? But the reality is that about 25% of our beef supply really comes out of the dairy side of the industry. So how are they affected, and, you know, are we getting the penetration there with beef quality assurance that we'd like, or where do we go from this point?
That's a great question, Ron. We've taken a whole different approach to dairy in the last two and a half, three years. You know, for a long time, we tried to create dairy BQA resources and certification modules that we could try to penetrate the dairy industry with. And, you know, some state coordinators had better success than others. We had very little pickup with the national training platform for dairy BQA. So, you know, we just took a whole new approach with trying to partner with the farm program that National Milk Producers Federation runs. That's Farmers Assuring Responsible Management. They launched that 6 or 7 years ago, and it's had tremendous success. So, you know, we reached out to them and engaged about 2.5 years ago. They put us on their technical writing group for their farm version 3.0, which rolled out January of this year. And we were able to add significant BQA resources. They had already picked up quite a few of our resources in their residue avoidance strategies, in their fitness for transport resources. But we just went in and added a lot to that and helped them with some of their education resources. Their program is based more on an evaluation or an assessment, and we went in and helped them build out some of their library for training resources. And now they require employee training and stockmanship as of January as part of their farm evaluation. And Ron was part of a group that helped us put together, and we co-funded with them a stockmanship resource for dairy that's excellent. It's a video, has some questions that goes with it. It's probably one of the best stockmanship videos I've ever seen, Ron, and uses a lot of new technology, being a little bit more modern. Talking about training new employees, I did a talk to North American Meat Institute folks just last week and encouraged those that were hiring new folks there, no matter what size they are, at a packing operation, to train their new employees in cattle handling. That video is a great resource, whether they're handling beef or dairy animals. It goes over those stockmanship principles in a way that anyone can understand it. So, you know, that dairy farm program covers 98% of the fluid milk supply in the U.S. They've got tremendous penetration. And so we're delivering our message, our key concepts in collaboration with the farm program, and we're getting penetration now into that industry.
I think it's interesting if you look at the farm program, that we've always kind of felt on the beef side that the dairy was lagging behind. With 3.0, they went ahead of us on the beef side. They now have more requirements for training, more requirements for audits, assessments, and that is a really good program that they've implemented at 3.0, and that it came from the milk cooperatives, basically pushing it back down the chain because their customers were asking for it. And I've been really proud of what they did. They finally just bit the bullet and said, this is what we've got to do. And they have a really good program, and now we've got to try to catch up with where the dairy's at on the beef side. So that's good. That's a change from where we've been in the past. But there's good resources developed. They've put a lot of emphasis in getting things better through the farm program. So partnering up with them, we always hoped they would come to our side, but Josh and them made a great decision to go and help them build the farm program. And we don't have two different programs. Farm runs on the dairy side, BQA runs on the beef side, and I'm fine with that because we've got a great working relationship now. And I do more beef work than anything, but I'm starting to go do trainings for the farm program on the dairy side of it. And so they really using us on both sides of the fence right now, and I'm proud of what they've done and how they've done it. And they caught a lot of flack from the industry for making that big jump, but they've done a great job with it.
Yeah, we've had, I think, 10 state coordinators so far that we've helped fund go through the farm evaluation training program so they could go out and do evaluations for the farm program as well. So, again, we're trying to add value, you know, for our state coordinators, help them to be able to support the farm program. And that stockmanship training requirement that they have now, it works with a BQA training or a stockmanship training. They can check the box on the dairy side. So there's still opportunity to cross over and have, you know, visit with our dairy friends a lot for our state coordinators and for us. I mentioned earlier the progress that we have seen on this latest cow and bull quality audit as well, and tremendous progress on mobility scoring, on body condition scoring, and on bruising severity on the dairy side. So I don't think there's any doubt that that farm program is working because the data is really bearing it out.
Seen a lot of good improvements quickly once they implemented 3.0.
Yeah, that's encouraging to hear. I think a lot of beef producers will be encouraged to hear that as well. You know, the perception that I hear a lot is that the dairy side of beef production is where we might be have some vulnerabilities. That's very encouraging.
Well, I mean, on dairy or beef, I think we all have to continue to hold ourselves to a high standard when it comes to fitness for transport, for culling animals, marketing animals in a timely manner, whether it's bulls or cows. You know, I've certainly been guilty of saying just one more calf out of that cow that's produced a lot of good calves for me back at the farm. But, you know, I usually do bring in another set of eyes, either a farmer that I respect, that's a neighbor, or my veterinarian to look at those cattle that I may be a little on the fence about and say, you know, put your set of eyes on her. Is she good for another calf, or would you cull her out of your herd? And I think that's something that we probably don't do enough of, is let, whether your vet's out for preg check or somebody else, you know, help having another set of eyes on those cows always is a good thing, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I heard a good saying the other day first time we did a dairy BQA training, we had consulting veterinarians come in, and one of the older veterinarians said his business had changed from one of diagnosis to prognosis. Because things can change and go downhill so quick in that dairy cow, they have to make a decision whether or not to move her to market then or try to treat her, pull the milk out of the system. There's a whole host of things. So Josh is right. They really embrace the idea that maybe we do need to sell her today and not wait a week, or treat her and see if she gets over it and put her back in the milking parlor. So to me, that they're bringing the outside thoughts into that process. in a little different model in the way they've managed those cows, because I don't think us in the beef industry realize how quick a dairy cow can change from a good sound cow to one that has to go to town now. And so that's something the dairymen are really trying to embrace, I think, and do a better job of getting those cows to town quicker.
Josh, we've talked a little bit before about the online training. Let's drill down into that a little bit. How does it work? Is it you know, if you're on a ranch out there and you've got a satellite internet connection? I had one for many years, and I know it's not the fastest thing in the world. How does it work? Does it really? Are you really seeing some pickup with it? Our producer really using it?
Oh yeah, we've had we launched our new module, sort of the 2.0 of the BQA online modules, in February at our annual convention, and we've had over 8,000 folks go through the module so far. So we've seen tremendous pickup. We've got a new ad campaign we're working on around those modules, but we anticipate seeing continued pickup there. I mean, Wi-Fi is a challenge. I think we're in better shape now than we were with the previous modules. They were video-based. They took a lot more bandwidth than our current system, which does incorporate some video, but it is more based in a learning management system that's a little less bandwidth-heavy, you know, requirements. So there may be an opportunity, you know, when the videos come up, to go grab a cup of coffee or use the restroom while things catch up. But I think overall we're in better shape as far as the speed required to get through those modules. And, you know, I always recommend if you can get to an in-person training where there's some hands-on experience to go with it, that is the way to go. I mean, there's no doubt that you cannot replace that value, the interaction with your fellow cattlemen. Going through that and the expertise of those state coordinators and trainers is invaluable. But, you know, if that's not an option for you, if you don't have time, we do have the online module, and we think we've added a lot of value to it this time. Again, not being video-based, it's much more activity-based. So you're not just watching a video and then answering some questions. It's point, click, drag, drop, much more interactive. You know, some of it's a little silly maybe or a little gamey. Feeling that appeals to our younger producers. We tried to make it, you know, whether you think it's a little silly or not, I bet you'll remember doing the activity. And that's what our research shows, is that when you engage someone in an activity in an online module, make them pick up the mouse, point click, and do things, it registers, it sets in your mind, and it helps you to remember and actually have a take home from that rather than just watching a video the whole time.
Gentlemen, any last comments? We've talked a lot about the program. I'll make no bones about it. I'm a staunch advocate of BQA. I agree that I think every producer needs to be certified then recertified periodically, just because you forget and you tend to revert back to the way you've always done things. So, any last comments, anything that you'd like to cover that you think would be important for cattle producers to know and understand?
Well, the thing that I think is important to get across to people is that it's not the same story since it started. This thing has progressed, and we're now focused on a little more advanced management, I think, other than just putting a needle in a different place in an animal. And so a lot of people think, well, they've been through it one time, they know all they need to know, and then go on to whatever else there is. That's not really the way BQA works. And so stay engaged. That's why we try to have these recertification efforts and requirements, that people stay engaged and see what's new and don't become stagnant in their management. So to me, that's something we've got to continue to try to do, is encourage people to come in. The whole stockmanship component, I think, is important to keep promoting that, not just because that's a passion of mine, but it really does have benefits to the industry to change the way we do things. We've not really talked about the transportation sector right now, but we've got some great training available in the transportation side of it. transporter certification, I think, may be one of the next requirements that comes out. People that are hauling cattle have to be trained. They have to be certified. And to me, that's not a bad thing. It could be easily done and be beneficial to those drivers that really are engaged in the livestock transport. And transportation training has been around a long time. We just not had any real requirement that it be done on beef cattle haulers. We've done stuff on stock trailers as well. And so there's a lot of things from the transportation side, which is another stressor on our cattle, and it ties directly into the stockmanship side of it. And so the stockmanship, marketing, and we didn't talk about what we've done in the marketing side of things. We've done a lot of work with auction markets and continue to do that. And so it's not just cow, calf, stocker, and feedlot. We've got transporters, auction markets, order buyers, everybody that's involved in it. We've got a component that fits what they do. And so to me, I think there's a misconception about what the limitations of BQA. If you really get to looking at it, we cover a lot of country and we cover a lot of facets of this industry and where we have some weak spots, and really looking at what we do from a public perception. The livestock marketing was a great example, one called the focal point, because they are a focal point of the community, and anybody can walk in there and see what's happening. So we really need to make sure that the handling component is done right there. But sometimes we forget there's also a veterinary processing area at an auction market. And so once again, BQA principles and handling come into play there, because that's another very visible part of it. So to me, we've just kind of touched on some of the surface of what we do in BQA, but there's a lot of resources, and Josh and NCBA have done a great job in building that library of resources. We continue to do that. The state BQA coordinators have got great ideas, and we keep bringing those out through the coordinator meetings.
Looks like we lost Ron there for a second. I'll take his lead on transportation and mention that we are launching transportation certification modules brand new this fall. So be sure and go check those out. And we've got a track for the professional driver as well as farmer rancher. There's also a dairy component built in there. So those are brand new and fresh, and they will come with a certification number and card a certification card for professional drivers, so that a livestock market, a feed yard, a cow-calf guy or the packer can ask, you know, are you certified, and have some verification of that. So that system is just about ready to roll here in just a few weeks.
Well, that about wraps up this edition of the Beef Roundtable. I'd like to thank Dr. Ron Gill from Texas A&M University and Josh White, NCBA Executive Director of Producer Education, for being our guests. Please join us again next month when our Beef Roundtable discussion topic will be another great discussion.